Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Today, our guest is Ish Verduzco, Diversity Specialist, Strategic Partnerships Lead at Snap Inc. Ish, pleasure to have you on. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about your role at Snap.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Mario. So, hey, everybody. My name is Ish. I was born and raised throughout Southern California, attended a small school in the Central Valley called UC Merced, currently working at Snapchat in doing diversity, equity, and inclusion. Prior to my current role, I was working at LinkedIn, where I had a couple of different roles doing everything from social media marketing, employer branding, and recruiting events. So I like to stay busy. I like to keep learning and doing a couple of different things. In terms of my role at Snap right now, as you can imagine, diversity, equity, inclusion is a very important topic, and it spans a lot more than the average person perceives it to be. So it's not just diversity in terms of recruiting and the people that we hire. Diversity also impacts everything from the product and the content, as well as like the people that are already working at the company. So in terms of like how included and how do people feel in terms of like being themselves at each company. And a lot of diversity teams work on internal initiatives so that people feel like they truly can like be themselves and belong. So there's a couple of different legs to diversity, equity, inclusion, but that's kind of an overview. And I'm happy to answer any questions. So thank you again for having me.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I didn't know that part about, you know, well, I guess we could start, you know, I have a pretty limited view of diversity and inclusion coming from a multicultural marketing perspective. I really see, we help companies do research so that their marketing, right, so their external facing is inclusive and culturally sensitive.
Yeah.
And I think for many of us in the marketing industry, we tend to blend diversity and inclusion with marketing. But before we kind of get into the nuance, can you give the audience just a broad definition of diversity and inclusion?
Yeah. So diversity and inclusion, I guess it's been around for a while, but it's been getting a lot more attention in, I would say, like the past 8 years, because companies, especially like in the tech industry, have not been as inclusive. And there are also like a ton of systemic issues that prevent people from underrepresented backgrounds to have the opportunities to land jobs in tech. But I'll break it down a little bit further for you. So when you think about Latinos in tech and women in technical roles, like the representation is extremely low. Like if you look at companies like Google's, Facebook's, LinkedIn's, Twitter's of the world, like those type of companies, representation for Latinos is around 5 or 6%, maybe 7%, you know? So when you think about how underrepresented those people feel, and then even further, the products that they're working on, if they're not inclusive of all the different people around the world that are using it, then there's a huge miss in terms of how the actual service is being utilized. So I guess that's kind of an overview of like how diversity and inclusion is in its current state. There's a ton of work that needs to be done in this space. No company has really figured it out. No company is like set the model for everybody else to follow. But I think each individual company is doing some really cool things. And if we could all just come together and impact the entire industry, we'd make change a lot faster.
For sure. And you got me thinking, you know, working on the consumer facing side of things, I feel like it's the opposite end of diversity and inclusion, but they're both equally important. So for example, if you have a social media company that's out there telling consumers about how inclusive their product is in order to get more Latinas, in order to get more women of color to use the platform, it's got to feel weird as, let's say you're a Latina at that social media company, knowing how it lacks diversity internally. Yep. And yet the companies out there marketing, like, look how diverse we are. You have to have both of those, right? Like, you have to have a good internal diversity and inclusion initiative in order to be able to have outward multicultural marketing that works and feels genuine. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah. And I mean, the easiest way to solve it without even having a, you don't necessarily need a diversity and inclusion team in order to make huge impact, as long as your the representation of your employee base is representative of the broader society. You know, like having 5% Latinos and, or like fewer than 1% like Latinas in tech, technical roles, like that's not representative of the broader society. So when you think about the people that are using the product or service, how can you ensure that your internal company walls, the people that work there, reflect that a lot more? And then the work itself will translate. You know, the people that are working on projects and products and initiatives and marketing campaigns will have different views naturally because they come from different backgrounds, and you'll be able to get a lot further reach or engagement or whatever the metric is that you're looking for.
That's so true. That's a great way to put it, right? Because right now we're siloing it, right? Like we need these labels because it's so not representative. But if you had that representation, right? Like Latinos are 20% of the US population. If 20% of your marketing team was Latino and Latina, your marketing would naturally just be more inclusive. And exactly. And then to your point about product roles, that's a whole other rabbit hole we can go down, right? I mean, how you design products. I mean, one of the things that I think most people know in terms of examples and are like filters, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Building filters for people of different colors, different shades. I mean, I think of AI not being able to classify darker skin. I mean, that's real impact for things that we use every day, right?
Yeah, exactly. And another example that I recently mentioned was LinkedIn has a text box that it asks you to fill out whenever you upload like a photo. And it's essentially for the visually impaired. So people who are visually impaired are obviously not able to see the photo as well. So if you add a description of what it's like or what is in the photo, they're able to get a better understanding of what it's like. So not only is that like the inclusive and right thing to do, but in terms of the engagement on the platform, think about all the people who are using that and using the platform much more, you know?
Yeah. And that's one thing that, you know, I've been in multicultural marketing now for 10 years. And to your point, I mean, you said it well. Not only is it the right thing to do, but it's right from a business mm-hmm. perspective. And that's the frustrating thing that, you know, trying to bang the drum about diversity and inclusion from a marketing perspective, from an internal perspective. We know, I mean, and you know better than anyone, right? Diverse teams lead exactly. to better results. And you get more people on your platform. You know, that being said, this is Monday, June 8th that we're recording it. It's going to be probably published in a couple weeks, but we've been undergoing one of the largest protests in history after the murder of George Floyd. So I imagine, you know, your role has been impacted. I mean, and I think that all diversity and inclusion is going to be impacted by this. I mean, we're seeing a huge uptick and brands and companies making outward-facing statements. And I think a lot of that is translating internally. I mean, how do you see diversity and inclusion changing in light of these events?
Yeah, I think I think diversity and inclusion at different companies and in the tech industry as a whole is going to move from being on the diversity and inclusion teams to be more of like a shared responsibility for the entire company. Because in past years, it's more of like, oh, that's a DEI issue. That's a diversity issue. Pass it over to the diversity team and have them handle it. Whereas like now you have other leaders at different companies taking responsibility and actually putting themselves out there that they're going to make change, you know, so they're on the hook for it. It's no longer just, hey, have the diversity team say what we're going to do. And then
resource them accordingly so that they can do it. Now it's like, what can we do with the different teams and the different leaders that we have at this company or the different companies to make an impact however we can, you know?
And do you see your position enabling those leaders now instead of you, it kind of falling all on you and your team? I mean, do you see yourself more kind of working one-on-one with leadership to promote these aspects of diversity and inclusion that you've been doing from a team perspective?
I definitely agree. And not just like at my company, but I think across the industry, different DEI like leaders or people that work on DEI initiatives. Because it's for some reason, I mean, obviously all the different videos and the protests and the content and everything that's been shared helps, but it's finally clicking in people's head. You know, people are finally understanding what it's like to be a person of color or even just a Black person in America, in the United States of America, you know, and it's sad that it had to get to this point, but the thing that's coming from it is people are realizing, like they're waking up to the fact. So now that they have that perspective, they can never lose that, you know? And so they're going to, I see it as the leaders definitely are going to be a lot more interested to learning about what they can do to make change. And working, like you said, working a lot closer with DEI teams and even like external like companies or any other like thought leaders in the space that can help resource the companies or the leaders or whoever the CEOs, whoever they are that need answers for these questions that are really difficult.
Do you, I mean, you're really plugged into the space and, you know, I follow you on LinkedIn and Twitter and you're engaging with a lot of D&I people at really large organizations. Does this feel different to you? Do you feel like there's going to be meaningful change at companies now?
I think so. And I think so because the level of detail that some of these, not only statements, but like literally commitment from leaders is astonishing. You know, like this, the stuff that the racial inequality that we're seeing in America is not new, obviously. It's like, it's very cyclical. It happens. It has happened in the past. People get all like riled up on it on social. They share content, but this time it feels different because the proposed actions and the way some different leaders like Ben and Jerry put out a statement that was phenomenal. It was extremely complex. It was extremely calling out the racial injustice. It provided actionable next steps that they're holding the government and different leaders across the industry to take in order to make change. So like that's stuff that we haven't seen in the past, you know, like other statements that we've seen in the past years are like, we stand with the Black community, we stand with the X community, and we want change. That's completely different from putting out a statement that clearly identifies 5 to 10 different things that they want to see or that they're going to be contributing to change.
For sure. And looking at Ben and Jerry's, I mean, I agree with you. I read the statement. I mean, I think that's a gold standard in terms of how to put out a company statement denouncing white mm-hmm. supremacy, promoting diversity and inclusion. But that you have a lot of companies on the opposite spectrum that have never really grappled with issues of diversity and inclusion. Maybe they're smaller business, but they have the intention, they want to do something. You know, what are some pointers that you would give to companies just starting to get a handle on this? Just, you know, I mean, what are some practical things, some practical steps that companies can take that are starting this diversity and inclusion journey?
Question. I mean, the most practical thing that companies can do is start within the company. Look at your employees and find out who's most interested in tackling some of these issues, and align them with who are the diverse employees that are willing to help out, and understand that not every single person of color is going to want to do this, because some people are just exhausted. You know, like members of the Black community have been saying that they're exhausted of having to educate leaders. They're exhausted of having to share their story. They're exhausted of having to be the ones to teach and educate others about the racial inequality, or, you know, be a history teacher and tell everybody why they feel the way they feel and it's for so long, how generational it's been. But then again, there are people at their company or your company, at every company, that are willing to go ahead and do that extra work. So I guess the most practical thing is, like, look within your company and listen, you know, learn about the stories if people are willing to share. Host focus groups, host an open space, whether that's a town hall or a forum, or have your executive leadership team meet with employee resource groups and have a genuine conversation where they're listening versus speaking and guiding the conversation, if that makes sense. And then once learning, like, from their stories, then you can actually have something, like some grounding information that you can like level set on. I'm not sure if that's entirely helpful, because not every company has employee resource groups, but I'm hoping that every company has people from underrepresented groups that work there. Otherwise, that's a whole different issue to solve for.
No, that's some really great advice. And, you know, because I think what happens, what I see with a lot of companies, and looking at it from a marketing perspective, companies see other companies that do multicultural marketing really well. And then they get, you know, they get disenfranchised, like, I can't do that. You know, if looking at tackling diversity and inclusion, they see what Ben and Jerry's are doing and they're like, I can't do that. But don't look outside of your organization, is what you're saying. Look inside, have those conversations, and have it be organic, right? Tap into those people that show interest. And I think, to your point, do not assume that Black people in your organization want to head up diversity and inclusion, because they, like you said, they're tired. I've seen that. I've had these conversations as well. Not only are you grappling it from a personal perspective, but now you have managers and leadership reaching out to you. So you have to, like, put your feelings aside and you know, teach a history lesson, like you said. So, make sure that you're being cautious of that, aware of that. That's a great idea.
Making a safe space, you know, like, nobody wants to share their story and then have it come up in a meeting later on, or be reprimanded for it, or have somebody else who doesn't agree with whatever they're saying. Because it has been coming out in the press recently. I'm not going to, like, name any companies in particular, but like, if you're developing this space, make sure it's as safe as possible. Make sure it's people feel like they truly can speak their story or speak their opinions without any backlash coming from not only, like, the leadership team, but other employees at the company who may not agree.
Yeah, and I like your point that this is something every company can do, is just listen. If you're not ready to put steps out, or maybe you're not equipped, maybe you feel like, I don't know, you don't have the funds or the resources, the least you could do is listen. And I think that's a good tie to what I wanted to end our conversation on, something a little bit more positive note. This is positive, right? Having these conversations is positive. I don't want to position it as negative, but a different note, I should say. You know, you're writing a book, How to Get Ish Done. You're extremely inspiring on social. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit before we signed off here. What inspired you to write the book? And tell us a little bit about the book.
I'll start off by saying I'm not a writer. I've never been a writer my entire life. So when I first started this journey, it was never like, I'm going to write a book. That was actually the last thing that I had in mind. And the way this kind of all started off is I went down a rabbit hole of just learning a ton, maybe a couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. Started off with just, like, podcast interviews, and it progressed to, like, YouTube interviews, and it progressed to, like, documentaries, and just, like, watching tons of documentaries about people's stories and how they've gotten to where they are in their careers or their lives. Then it progressed to, like, tons and tons of books. In 2019, I read 45 self-development books. But throughout that entire process, I realized there were zero authors that were Latinos from the 45 books that I read. And I got the books from, like, recommendations. So they're, like, some of the most, like, highly recommended self-development books out there. But I just found it to be extremely sad. Like, why is it that these are fantastic books, but none of them are representative of like myself and my culture. So then I started thinking even further, like, well, man, that like, wouldn't it be amazing if somebody could relate to people on a different level? Because anybody who's like, we're all natural born learners. We enjoy learning. So that's a given. But it's, I think people can learn and understand content and be able to relate to things even more when the person who's teaching it or the person who's talking about their experiences is culturally relevant, you know? So that's kind of how I started off with writing the book. I first thought maybe it could be a YouTube series, but then I was like, no, I'm not that charismatic on video. And I thought it could be a blog series potentially to share out all these stories and key learnings that I've found from studying successful people. But then I thought, well, blogs are awesome for like the short term, but I can't really think of that many single blog posts that I've reread multiple times and that were like super impacting on my life. So then I thought, well, a book would be amazing because I can go speak to a school or 300 students of color, or like it's tangible. You can speak to somebody and say, hey, you want to achieve this goal? I can relate to you because I was in your shoes or whatever the situation is. Here's a book with all the steps that you got to do in order to get to where you want to get to. So that's kind of like how and the why, I guess.
That's awesome. I mean, and it's sad because I'm a big reader as well. Well, actually, I'm an audiobook person. So I guess I'm a listener, but I consider it reading. But yeah, I'm into the self-help more on the business side of thing. And I do lament the fact that there aren't not even Latinos, there aren't many just exactly. People of color, like, you know, so that I think that's great. Who should read your book? Like who is it aimed at? Who's your ideal
reader?
Anybody
who has an itch to like achieve a goal or wants to like execute a project that as well as possible or has a dream, anybody will be able to learn from the principles. But the audience that I wrote it with in mind is people from underrepresented groups. Like and I got this question recently, what makes my book, my self-development book, different from all the thousands of other self-development books out there? And my answer was very simple. I was like, the audience that I wrote it for. I wrote it for the people that are often overlooked, the people that are often underrepresented in certain spaces, the people that are often told that they can't do something because somebody hasn't done it in the past, that comes from their background. So like, if you think about Tim Ferriss is extremely intelligent guy. He's like he's a learner. He will constantly learn for the rest of his life. He likes to educate others. But if you're a person of color or you come from a background or an upbringing that's completely different from Tim Ferriss's, some of the content is not going to fully like translate or fully sink in with you. You know, like you're going to learn a lot of content, but it's different if somebody else who can speak, not necessarily like the language literally, but can speak to experiences that you can relate to. So the exact audience that I wrote it for was like 18 to 35 people of color, whether you're like Black, Latino, Asian, whatever it is. I wrote it for them. And the main point was just because like, well, all these other books that I've read and listened to, none of them were written for that audience in mind. They were all written for like the white 18 to 30 techie audience or self-development audience. That's it usually doesn't fall within the category that I'm trying to reach.
For sure. Yeah. And to wrap it up, I think anyone that wants to get anything done and anyone that's been inspired by our conversation and wanting to do something in terms of diversity and inclusion, read the book and get on it. Right. Thanks again, Ish. This has been a great conversation. I learned a lot. I mean, I know again from diversity and inclusion, from a marketing perspective, you made me think about it differently for companies, looking to do this internally. So thank you. If people want to find you online, can you share your website, social media handles,
yes,
LinkedIn
of course.
For
you
us?
You can find me on all of the above, just at Ish Verduzco, ISH, last name VERDUZCO. Find me all on all the socials, website and everything as well. Connect on LinkedIn. I share a lot of content.
And how about finding what's the best way to buy your book?
The book is available on Amazon. You could just type in Get Ish Done. It's a white cover, black text, super simple. As I told you, I have a marketing background, so I wanted to find a cover that was going to stand out from all the other loud, colorful covers.
Awesome. All right. Thanks again, Ish. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.